Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Hopeful Environmentalists, a podcast where we discuss hope in the climate space with amazing guest speakers. Today, we're going to have a really interesting conversation with a mental health professional to discuss the importance of connecting with our natural world and what it can do for our mental health, along with many other amazing and incredible and interesting topics. So definitely stay tuned. But before we get into the episode, I have an exciting conference opportunity that I'd love to share with you all that's happening this April. This April, the EarthX 2024 Congress of Conferences is the sustainability summit you won't want to miss. 5 days of conferences covering the built environment, the natural environment, e-capital, oceans, island resilience, and conservation. The range of people, power, perspectives, and potential will be unmatched, and this conference will be one you won't want to miss. The EarthX conference will attract the world's foremost environmentalists, conservationists, scientists, academics, entrepreneurs, business leaders, family offices, and policymakers engaged in the environmental space today. EarthX brings together people from all sides to engage in powerful conversations for one important mission: protecting our planet. Please join us at EarthX Congress of Conferences, April 22nd through April 26th in Dallas, Texas. Go to earthx.org to register now and get more details. So now I'd love to introduce our guest speaker, Pamela Lowell. She's treated complex emotional trauma for almost 4 decades in private practice. She's also served as a clinical director, consultant, and trainer for not-for-profit agencies. Pamela is an astute observer of both human behavior and the natural world. In her latest book, My Summer with Ospreys, she weaves together observations and personal experiences into an exciting narrative as a passenger on the Lucky Me, along with scientists of Mass Audubon and a cast of dedicated volunteers. With original watercolor illustrations throughout, her journey towards hope, community, and healing our planet is one that can inspire us all to be better stewards of our ever-changing world. So without further ado, I'd love to introduce our guest speaker, Pamela.
Thank you, Taylor, for having me on The Hopeful Environmentalist. I'm very excited to be here. It is my very first podcast, so don't make me suffer too much, please.
Love that. Welcome to the world of podcasting. So much fun, and I'm so excited for this conversation. So do you mind telling us a little bit about what you do and how you got into environmental activism?
Sure. Well, I want to just start out also by saying I love the title of your podcast, because that is really what I'm all about as a therapist, is providing hope. So I started out many years ago as an art teacher, and then I quickly returned to school for my master's in social work. And for lots of different reasons, I think I really was very intrigued by the kids I was working with, and I wanted to do a deeper dive into some of their problems. And so I've been a trauma therapist working mostly with girls and women who experience anxiety, trauma, and depression ever since. And so in my, other than my work world, I've always had a real respect for nature and appreciation for our natural world. But it was only recently, during writing my book, My Summer with Ospreys, that I began to kind of put things together in my mind that I had a platform now that I could use to, make some impact and address environmental activism and climate silence. Kind of came together throughout that story, and then I couldn't not include it. So that's how it all got started.
Yeah. And I love that about climate silence. It's so true. I feel like sometimes I'm like, as environmental activists and people just on the earth, I feel like screaming into the void sometimes. And I feel like it's the same people. We're talking to ourselves sometimes, and going to the conferences and going to all these spaces. And it's like, okay, Now we need to branch out and get different people from different backgrounds involved in it, because the climate and the earth is all, we're all sharing this.
Yes. And not only, I mean, I was shocked when I read this survey by Yale University that said that two-thirds of all Americans say they rarely or never discuss climate change with family or friends. Now, that's not in our spaces, but I think even if they are talking about it, they're just, resigned to, oh, woe is me. There's nothing we can do anyway. So, next, what are we going to talk about now? The economy or whatever, something that doesn't matter half as much as what's going on with our planet. But they feel helpless and hopeless. And that's what we want to change. I think that's what you want to change, or you wouldn't be doing this podcast.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's like it's a very interdisciplinary field, and I think people don't often realize that. And I think for me, a big turning point was when I was the nature club president at my university, and I was like, oh, well, why do we have all these people from different majors? Like why do they care? And then I thought about it. I'm like, well, climate finance, that matters. People who are just impacted personally, that's their own experience. They don't need to have a major. That's their experience. There's the climate justice. And we need climate
Yes.
justice. Well, there's always something in a field that every field comes into climate in some way, very interdisciplinary. So I think that's super important. And again, mental health and people experiencing climate anxiety, and even if they're not experiencing climate anxiety and they're just experiencing mental health, there's so many ways that the environment can shape that. So, and I know you'll be talking about that, so
Yes, you're speaking
get
my language. You're
ahead of you.
speaking it. You're right there with me. I'm like, okay, well, wait, that's like question four, but
Yeah.
we'll get there.
We'll get there. We will get there. So love that. And I know you mentioned your book a little bit. So I know you talk about your time with Osprey as well, volunteering for the Massachusetts Audubon. And you talk about the connections and self-made realizations from interacting with this great species. And for anyone who doesn't know, an osprey is a bird. And I implore you to look them up. They're a great, amazing species. So do you think interactions like this spark action and a deeper sense of appreciation and urgency to protect our home and its inhabitants?
Well, absolutely. And I like the word spark action. This is silly. I should know this as a birder, but someone just told me that the osprey was their spark bird. And I had to Google that. Like, what the heck does that mean? Well, it's the bird that first got us really interested in birding. That's your spark bird. So your spark action, I guess, or when you became an environmentalist, is that's your spark. And this was a spark. I was, climbing ladders, we checked eggs, we do a lot to try to protect and conserve the osprey habitat, but we're also doing what's called translocation. And so we're moving ospreys to a place in Illinois where they are still endangered. They're not endangered where we live in on the south coast of Massachusetts. But back in the 60s and 70s, way before you were, I don't know, just like a twinkle in your parents' eyes, there were chemicals, which you know about because you majored in this stuff. But DDT nearly destroyed a lot of our wild birds and our osprey population. And the ospreys were like the canary in the coal mine. However, scientists, environmental activists, policymakers around the world were actually able to ban DDT. And I mean, it's incredible to think about, wow, the world actually worked together to do something positive for climate change back then that actually made a difference. It's wild. But anyway, they came back. All these birds came back, the ospreys came back, they're thriving. Mostly they're thriving. We're watching that kind of closely. But that story, the osprey story, m learning about that story and being with them week after week made me have hope that humans could somehow gather the wherewithal to achieve a similar result around climate change. I mean, it won't be easy, but we did do it once, at least once. and it made a real difference. So that's kind of a roundabout way of answering your question. I hope I answered your question, but yeah, it sparked a lot of action in me being with them week after week.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And I think a lot of things just came up for me from your answer there. And one first is there's hope in community and knowing that you're not alone and knowing that when we come together, right? If I go and not use plastic bags, it's not really going to make a difference. But if I get other people to do it and I spark, if I show people, hey, this is what you can do and this is the action, this is what happens when you do that. Then it sparks another person to do it, and another person, and another person. So that's why individual action matters. And you caring about those ospreys, if you care for one osprey, okay, everyone's like, well, what is that going to do? But if you care for one, and then you invite someone else to do it, and someone else, and now you're protecting however many ospreys, you know, it makes a difference. So I think that's awesome that you got that experience and that you got to do that. It's so cool. Do you still do that now?
I do. I'll be doing, we just had the volunteer sheet come around again. So we'll be going out on the boat and basically, we're going into the fragile salt marshes. We're climbing up ladders, tall, very tall ladders. We're wading through the salt marshes in our boots and slipping into these, mucky holes. But the cool thing about it for me was, as a therapist, being among scientists, I don't have a science background. I am, as I said, I'm a therapist. But scientists still, like you were talking about a little, where we were talking about that whole interdisciplinary piece of what it's going to take to make some changes happen. And to see scientists kind of come about, come around to things just a little, they're quiet observers, they're getting data, they're trying to change things for the good. So there were a lot of similarities that I just loved and write about in my book. And also, as we talk a little bit more about, well, what could we do? How do we talk about it in a way that people aren't freaked out or depressed or have climate anxiety or any of the other things that, because that's what paralyzes people into thinking they can't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. And that's so true. You know, for me, that's why I love to provide hopeful resources. You know, and I always say that even when I provide hope, like I also do tell reality and where we are currently, but just because we're in a place where we're not doing the best with our climate action doesn't mean we can't. And sparking, like, okay, well, here's the hopeful news that happened this week, you know, and how does that make you feel? Good, right? Well, if you want to continue that, just keep doing it. Keep sparking action with other people. Keep spreading that news and that hope, and more people will get involved. Because when we think there's doom, what's the point of helping, right? If I think, okay, well, we're doomed anyways, well, then it doesn't really spark me to do anything, right? There, if I do something, if I recycle, it's not going to do anything, right? But it can do things. We can change systems. We can create change, and I think that's super important.
Yeah, well, there's a famous one of the most influential psychologists of the last century, Albert Bandura, did a lot of studies on what makes change, how does change happen, and one of the ways is if people feel they have agency, which is feeling like what they do will make a difference. If you don't feel like what you're going to do is going to make a difference, why do it? The other thing that he talked a lot about was role modeling, which you're saying using as sparking people's interest, but role modeling for others also provides a bit of accountability too. And that's another piece of change because we want to and need to hold each other accountable. By role modeling, hey, this is what I did this week. What did you do? Those are really good questions, not in an accusatory way. And what can we do together? Is there something we could do together? Because people are lonely, and well, we'll get into that more in the next few questions.
Love that though. Yeah, no, I was just like thinking too when you said spark bird. I'm like trying to think of mine. I whoever's listening right now, definitely like pause the podcast for a minute and just like think, what is your spark bird or what is your spark reason for being in the climate space? and think about that, because I think that's a cool thing to think about and thinking about, okay, well, why do I want to take action? And that's an important thing. So if it's a bird or if it's climate action, whatever it is,
Or both, they're interconnected.
very true, very true. You have a good point there. And I think just something I was thinking about too, I think a lot of people, and going back to that interdisciplinary a little bit, they want experiences like the ones that you're having and how cool it is to be out in the field and taking this action and being with these cool, amazing birds and meeting amazing scientists. But people feel like, okay, I need to go to school, get a 4-year degree, then get a master's, then get a PhD. That's the only way I can have these experiences. So how did you get into this experience? I know you talked about how you got into environmental activism, but how did you find this? And did you need a PhD in wildlife biology to do this?
Well, it is a little bit of a club, I have to say. Sometimes, and birders will know, any of the birders that are in, that are listening to this, birders kind of know each other, and they kind of hang together, and they know where the birds are. And this is a project that's been going on for, well, for 5 years, this particular project. But to kind of track down how do I do this took a little bit of investigation. But there are lots of organizations out there. I mean, you just have to Google climate change in your town, and you'll get probably 10 organizations that are doing something. For birding, it's you can contact your local Audubon Society, or a nature center nearby. They're always looking for volunteers and for people to do all sorts of fun monitoring of all sorts of cool things. They have butterfly tagging. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but they put little tags on butterflies to the monarchs to trace where they're going. Like there's just and there's a really a need to kind of help, and it feels so good to feel like you're doing a part with people who care about the environment that you just like you do. But there's also like cleanup stuff. There's local groups that clean up beaches or clean up parks or do all sorts of fun stuff where you can and you meet people and you don't feel alone. I kind of contacted my local Audubon. I tracked down the people and I said, "Sign me up. I'm doing this." And I had my camera out on the boat with me, and I don't think they quite knew what to make of me in the beginning, because all I did was like take a ton of pictures. But gradually I proved my worth.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's so important, and I think there's a place for everybody in the movement. If you don't want to be out on a f in the field, taking pictures of birds or helping bird, whatever you want to do, there's something for you in this field. And for me, I worked in state parks, and I always advise people to get involved in citizen science programs or a beach cleanup or whatever it might be, because there's, or even just making social media graphics to get people involved. There's always something for someone. Like if you want to be out in the marsh or you want to be in your home in on your computer, there's always something and a way to get involved. So thank you for sharing that experience.
Sure.
So going back a little bit to your job as a therapist, how does your work as a therapist relate to environmental activism?
Well, as a social worker, so my background is not psychology or like counseling, but it is in particular social work. And what we are trained to look at is systems. So when we treat mental health issues like trauma or anxiety, depression, we look at the whole person within the environment. So, like, what are their support systems? What are their strengths? What are they doing for self-care, nutrition, relationships, etc.? So, for me and for our field, it's a natural fit for social workers to look at the system in which we are living, and our ecosystem is in trouble. And it is important, I think, for therapists, for social workers, and those in therapy just to talk about, what are your fears? What are your dreads about what's happening to the environment, and what could make you feel better? But also, as a social worker, we talk about ethical responsibility, like advocating for policies and practices that create, you know, sustainable communities, limit damage to the environment, help people adapt to climate change. You know, we serve populations that are vulnerable and susceptible to being impacted disproportionately to climate change, climate justice. So these are all like really important sort of natural fits between what I do as a therapist and, you know, things like after COVID. I mean, I worked as a therapist through COVID, which isn't necessarily, well, I sort of see it as connected to the environment for sure, because it was a systemic issue. And after any kind of environmental disaster, people experience depression, irritability, insomnia. So we intersect on those levels too. So, but the most important thing I think that we do as social workers is we're experts at helping people communicate and come together. And so if we can help people learn how to talk about climate change without anxiety and also communicate and come together and find community, those are all central to social work field. And it's funny, in my book, I think you'll find this funny. I have like an imaginary therapy session with Mother Earth. And so, and that's one of the things I role play out when I'm doing my talks around the South Coast of Massachusetts and other places. I have, I'm the therapist and someone in the audience is Mother Earth. And we talk about how she has been traumatized by climate change and how she needs people to listen to her and to help her because she can't do this by herself. And it's a very poignant for me when I sort of came up with that idea. Like I could cry just thinking about it because it felt so real to me for all the people that I've helped with trauma. I started to think about, well, what about our Earth's trauma and all the things we've done to her and how can we help her? And we owe it to her to help her. So is so anyway, that those are all the different ways that my field can contribute to what's going on environmentally and help people.
Yeah, and I love that idea of systems. You know, when we're so connected to our earth, and when a system within ourself and our own body isn't working or we're not nurturing it, we're going to feel it, right? But and it's the same thing with our earth, right? If we start polluting the oceans, the earth is going to feel it, and maybe not in the same way that we feel it, but it's still feeling it. It's still a living system.
Yeah. I mean, what are we learning now about trees and communicate, having this whole amazing root system that communicates? I mean, we haven't begun to tap into our natural world systems and how they're interconnected. And we try to pretend, I think, as humans that we're not a part of that. And yet we're so much a part of that. And that's where the breakdown, I think, has probably occurred the most, when we stopped really realizing how connected we are to our environment.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of that comes from Indigenous communities as well, who have been preaching that. And we are Mother Earth. We are a part of Mother Earth. We are related to the trees. And I heard a speech, and I will write the quote and I will write who said the speech later, because I'm forgetting the name right now. But they just talked about how they're our relatives. The trees are our relatives. And it was spoken at the UN, and it was an amazing speech that I will have to link. Just like speaking about how we are relatives with the trees. We're relatives with the oil that we are extracting. And I think that's so powerful to think about, you know, that we kind of separate ourselves from the earth when we come from the earth, and we will return to the earth. And yeah. I think it's so important and cool to think about that.
We have a lot of Indigenous folks in our area, as probably all across the states, and One of the chapters that I write about is one of the volunteers. I think it's in just like the second chapter. A youth, because there are a lot of young people, young scientists too, and young volunteers that come out on the boat with us. And he was there, and I didn't realize right away that he was an Indigenous person. And so I found that out during the course of our journey together on the boat. And what I learned that day was that in connection with ospreys, that Indigenous people have the right to take, if they find an osprey feather or an eggshell or part of a bird. But we, as non-Indigenous people, do not. They're federally protected. So there's all these, and to see him sort of come alive on that journey, and sort of he was kind of somber in the beginning, and then he started to get really excited, and he was like, "Oh my God, I just saw my first chick!" You know, to see a live baby osprey chick, it's something that most people will never experience. It was really just such a highlight. You can see them on web. On cameras, but not in real life. So anyway, that also struck me, like, and I write about that, like how his people used to traverse these waterways. All the islands have, you know, their the names of the little islands are Speaking Rock, Hidden Rock, Hog Island. I mean, you know that Indigenous people had a hand in naming those places, but unless you're really stopping to think about that, are you really connecting it? So I like that you brought that up. I think it's also really super important.
Yeah, no, I love those, and I love the connection as well. Going back a little bit, so for those who are currently struggling with their mental health, how can the natural environment play a role in healing ourselves?
Well, I don't know many people who aren't struggling on some level with some kind of mental health challenge. I mean, I think I know I talk a lot about COVID in life because I think just seeing a lot of first responders and teachers, a lot of teachers and young people who had to do their education online. I mean, just in its wake, just was just nasty. And climate change now is also doing a number on us. But anyway, how can the natural environment help us? Well, obviously, what we just talked about, being outside, is a powerful source of healing. I mean, I always prescribe walking outside to folks as part of their self-care routine. And I do that myself every day, no matter what the weather. And because, like we just said, we are from nature. We are from the earth. And I ask people to observe, to listen, to breathe, to be away from screen time. We aren't meant to be inside for as long periods of the day that we are. And they do have lots of studies about being in nature does alleviate depression and anxiety. It regulates blood pressure, it reduces cortisol. But I think one of the most important things about being in nature, at least for me, is that it creates a sense of awe. And to create awe in your everyday life is also a real anecdote for any kind of mental stress or strain. So if you're walking and you're observing just the changes that are occurring in your neighborhood, you're also creating a more positive mental vision of the future, which is important as well. So you're in the moment, you're breathing, you're in the moment, you're observing, you're curious, and you're building hope. So I think that for me is what being in nature does. I mean, besides all the other incredible things that it does, it also makes you care about our natural world in a different way. And caring and doing and doing activism, like we talked about a little bit ago, giving yourself a sense of agency. So depression is very much, and anxiety is very much, an inward thinking into yourself. But doing for others or volunteering or being with community is outward facing. And so it's the exact opposite. And it is healing to do that. That's another part of the prescription for feeling better, less anxious, and less depressed. And why not do it in nature?
Yeah, I know for me, the more I'm outside, the more present I am. And I am someone who deals with anxiety. And I know for me, the most present I am is when I'm outside. And I think what showed me that, my wake up call to that, was when I was working with snapping turtles and I was doing aquatic turtle research. And I'm like, if I am not present right now, my finger is going to be snapped off. That's why they get their name, snapping turtles. But it and you don't need to have an extreme experience to be outside doing aquatic turtle research to know that you need to be present and that you are present. You know, when you're outside, you're just thinking about your next step. And I love that. And it just, like, sometimes, like, when I start a hike, I'm like thinking about, okay, I need to do this, I need to do that, I need this. By the time I'm done, I don't even remember the to-do list that I made in my head.
Yeah, it's just there's just an infusion of this wonderful energy that comes. Yeah, and this peaceful calm that kind of descends. And yeah, I mean, well, snapping turtles are super cool. I mean, there are a lot of turtle rehabilitation. People can volunteer for that. It's a cool book by us. I don't know if you know, Cy Montgomery just did a book on turtles and time, which is really cool about people who rehab turtles. They find them on the side of the road and big snappers and all kinds of different turtles. And it's just a cool thing to do. But yes, being in nature, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, it's for anyone interested too. You know, there's always the rehab tests, and you can become a rehabber or even just volunteer at a rehab center. I am a rehabber, so if anyone
Wow.
wants to or is interested, I always know people that need help. I personally don't right now, but I know people who always do. So there's always people who get like 10 squirrels in and they need people helping, and that's a great way to get involved. And another, you know, way where you're helping with climate, you're helping with wildlife, you're getting hands-on experience, and you're healing and helping yourself. Like, you know, think about
Yes.
another living being and then also just being present.
Yeah, I have a lot of it's just excitement when people tell me about their adventures in nature and the things that they do. And there's a whole world out there that most people don't even know exists. A lot of people doing so many good things in the world. And when you start connecting up with them, you can't help but feel more hopeful. I think that's really a takeaway message from, I think, from reading my book for sure, but also from listening to the podcast. Like, connect with, there's a whole community out there doing amazing things. You don't have to walk around feeling depressed and down and woe is me and this is terrible and we're all doomed and doom scrolling for hours, which people do. Yeah, you could, but why? It prevents you from doing the very thing that could make a difference in how you feel.
And that's like a big reason of why I started this podcast is, for me, I was dealing with a lot of anxiety and feeling alone and isolated during COVID, as many people did. I know many people felt that way. But when everyone was cooped up at home and not able to speak with other people, a lot of us did feel like we actually were alone in this. And for me, I started really thinking about climate change more than I had ever. Like, I'd always been thinking about climate change, and it was always an anxious point for me, but it became something like I was on Instagram and scrolling through scientific articles and just making myself like sick, like literally sick, where I was physically feeling sick and mentally feeling sick. Like, I'm like, this is horrible. And I was like, I need to speak to people, and I need to find if there is hope. And that's when I started the podcast and I started speaking to so many people who were out in the field and even people who were a part of articles that were kind of doomy. And they just talked about, you know, they're, yes, that's the facts right now, right? But that doesn't mean that's our option. This is just the direction that we're going in, which is true, but it's not our fate. It's not the end all be all. You know, we can change what we're doing. And when we provide hope instead of that doom, that's when we create action. And I've felt, for me, I feel better mentally and physically about it. And I also just feel like I'm doing something. And before I was just, what was I doing by doom scrolling, but hurting myself and not providing that source of hope for other people where I could have been. So I think, you know, for me, the podcast has been something like finding what makes you happy and what fits into the world and what's needed. And that's Dr. Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson. She is the one who made this Venn diagram of like, do what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you enjoy. And that's what you should do. That's your action. And I love that. It's so true.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can just use some touchstones from your past. And, you know, what did I used to like as a kid? You know, I asked a lot of these young scientists who were out with me on the boat, like, what, like, how did you even get into this field? Like, why did you decide to, you know, study piping plovers or, you know, whatever their field of research is? And they're like, I just like being outside. You know, I was like, I thought they're going to say, I wanted to change the world. I just wanted a job where I could be outside and do good things. And I was always interested in nature. I was like, wow, that was pretty cool to me. I think, I don't know, if I wasn't a therapist, I think I probably would have gone into environmental science.
Yeah, I don't even know how I got into it, truly. I was always just like that kid who was like, everyone else was like doing, like playing, like, I mean, I played sports, but everyone was always like over there, like on their phone, or not phones, what were they on? They were iPods. I can't even think of the word.
Oh, their iPods. Yeah. With the little dial. Remember the little dial for your music? Yeah. Man, we've had a lot of transitions of how we do stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But they were always on their iPads and I was like looking at like scat and like trying to figure out what animal it was and like dissecting it. So I feel like for me, I was just always like this. But everyone has a way that they get in, because we also have to remind ourselves, like we talked about, we're all connected and we're all going to be impacted. Some are being impacted worse and already now.
Yes.
But that's why we have a duty as humans who care about other humans and experience empathy to, even if we're not feeling it right now or feeling the worst of it and other people are, we should be doing something.
Absolutely. One of the things I came up with was just like, I was trying to think about like, how do I simplify these conversations about climate silence for people? Like, how can they get to start talking about it? And so it's like, I just came up with like these three questions that I thought, so I'll tell you what they are. So one is, what do you think is happening to the environment? Just like, sort of like, what do you think? What do you think about it? What do you think is happening to it? It's just sort of a general question to ask somebody and see what they say and just listen to what they say. And the second one is, you know, what are you doing anything? What are you doing about it? And so they may give you some ideas. They may just say, oh yeah, I recycle or I do this or whatever. But then that's a chance for you to say, well, yeah, like, did you know that if you walk more places, you know, or if you, you know, I'm sure you can, we can go through a whole laundry list. We don't have to do that. But, you know, if as they're exchanging ideas. And then the third question is there something we can do together? And that really goes to accountability, to community. And that's what, I mean, that's the tagline. I mean, the book is My Summer with Ospreys, but you know, that the back door, that coming around the side entrance of that is, you know, a therapist's journey towards hope. Yes, we talked about that. Community and healing our planet. So I really wanted that to be a big emphasis so that people could see this isn't just, it is about my love of ospreys, and interestingly enough, about, you know, how they came away from the brink of extinction to where they are now, but it's also about a lot more and how we can talk about and change people's minds and come together. So yeah, it's been an exciting journey.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. And, you know, talking a little bit about community, and I have this question that I've been thinking of, and it's been like, I always like have thought about it, and like now I get to ask it, which is so exciting. What is collective healing, and how can it play a role in protecting the natural world?
Well, the model for collecting healing is when people are supported and empowered to develop their own skills, their own capacities to enable healing in their community, in their family, and in themselves. So that makes sense. It makes sense from a family systems point of view, which is where I'm coming from, so that if I see somebody in therapy and they decide, yeah, I'm going to learn how to set boundaries with my family, and I'm going to be the first person to break the cycle of abuse, and I'm not going to, you know, develop an addiction problem, like all this stuff. And just that one person healing themselves has a ripple effect, not only in the next generation, if there is one for them, but also among their family members, also among their friends, also among their communities, that it's so powerful to watch someone have agency, take agency over their own lives and healing. And so if you multiply that out, like, okay, not only am I going to try to help myself and heal myself, but I'm also going to move towards healing my community, towards some of the wounds that have happened, to whether it's environmental justice, because we certainly have to, you know, acknowledge that. But, you know, they can regain a sense of power and emotional support by being service to others and engaging in those practices. So I think it really is about our individual actions have such power collectively to impact the whole. And that's like social work 101, but it's also a whole movement that's in the world now by a lot of interdisciplinary folks who are believing in that power of individuals coming together to make change and to heal. And I think it's a great model, and one that's worth doing even deeper dive into. It's really interesting to me.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back a little bit to what we were talking before of like, yeah, if I am the only one in the world who brings a reusable bag to the store, then yeah, you're right. I probably won't be making much of a difference. But if you engage with others and you ask others to do, or why aren't they doing it? Or here's a bag, providing resources for people and showing them that, look, we can create this change. Here's the hope. Here's what plastic does, and here's how we can fix that. And then you start a movement of people who do that, which there are many movements of people doing that, then you can create real change. So I love that idea, and I love that, you know, mix of collective healing and environmental action and collective action. I love that.
I remember asking, you know, when we went out to dinner once with some of the younger scientists, and I said, hey, do you guys like sit around at the lunch around the lunch table, you know, in during your breaks, and like talk about the environment and stuff, like therapists talk about trauma and depression? Like, that's what we do. We love to talk about, oh, I had this client and they were struggling with this, and we did this and that, and now they're doing so much better. I'm like, do you guys do that? And Matt, one of the main guys in the book, he was like the captain of the boat that summer and in charge of the project. He was like, yeah, we do it. But, you know, we're just sort of, we don't sort of lament about it. We kind of just do what we're supposed to do. And we talk about what we've done, not like, oh, this is awful. So that was kind of an interesting take on it, I thought, that I think in some spaces it is part of daily conversation. In the science spaces, in the environmental spaces, I want it to be more the daily conversation in all the spaces. And I think you do too.
Yeah, I think for me, it comes up a lot of the time. You know, I'm like, I sit here and I'll like look at my chapstick and I'm like, okay, that's going to end up in a landfill. Like,
right, right. You can't not see it. Once you're there, you can never go back. That's where I'm at too. It's like, oh, in a good way. But I guess in a good way, it's also like, oh no, I just bought something. I shouldn't have bought that. You know, I shouldn't have bought that thing. So it's all about consumerism. It's all about we just buy too much stuff. It's like so much to learn. That's another really cool thing. I think once you start, looking a little deeper about, there really is a lot that you can do that you're not doing. And people are out there to tell you about that. And it doesn't mean a lot of work, but I think like, you know, when you go to therapy, you go for like an hour a week. And you can make usually, or even an hour every other week, and you make huge strides, huge changes. And I started to think about, well, what if people would become like environmental therapists, and they just spent an hour more, everybody spent just like 1 hour more a week doing something for the environment. Like that would be huge. That would be astonishing. And it wouldn't really be that much of a game changer for most people can fit that in. So I don't know, that was exciting to me when I started thinking about it in those kinds of terms too.
Yeah. And I think like on that, you know, a lot of people think, you know, going, doing environmental things has to be more money when it's really actually not.
And less.
Like, it's buying less, it's spending less. It's like, for me, something that I learned about was palm oil and how, you know, I can not buy certain candies and certain things that are contributing to, on the other side of the world, to deforestation, to human rights violations. And just by not buying something, by not buying like Hershey's candy, I can help so many people. Mm-hmm. And by speaking that into existence for other people, and by talking about that for other people, it's just learning. Sometimes people just don't know. And I don't know everything as someone who's in the space. And I shouldn't be expected to, and I shouldn't expect other people to, but that's why providing resources, free and accessible resources to people, is so important, and making sure people have the ability to get those resources is so important.
At whatever level they're at, you know, it's going to be very different depending on your community, depending on your resource, depending on your time, you know, depending on all the other things that, you know, your job constraints. But if you can make it fun as well, I think that's really a bonus. If you can feel connected to your community and not isolated and alone, if you can be mindful in and about nature. So there are a lot of ways that you can do it that feel good and help you feel good.
So on this point of feeling good, what, I love to ask this question for everybody, what gives you hope in the climate space and for our future and all our Earth's inhabitants?
Well, what gives me hope is the younger generation. I see and have met a lot of young people who really get it and who really care. And talking with some of those younger scientists and seeing people really want to make, I mean, I'm close to my retirement age, so I'm, you know, about passing the baton. I'm still going to prod my generation to get off their butts and do stuff because they contributed, not through no, you know, really through not a fault of their own. They were sold a bill of goods as well, but they don't have permission to just sail off into the sunset, into their golden years. Like, come on, folks, we need to help the young people out. This is the earth that they're inheriting, and we need to do something about it. but I'm still overwhelmingly hopeful. There are a lot of smart people working on these issues and a lot of people who care. All you have to do is look around your community and you can find them, old and young. On this project, there were like 95-year-old men and 22-year-old women on the same boat working together to help these ospreys. It makes you cry because it's just so beautiful. This movement can really be intergenerational, and but the energy of the youth and their passion is also pretty exciting to see.
I love that. Yeah, I'm big.
People like you, Taylor.
Big into that. I think a lot of like my generation is very much like, okay, it's time. Like, no more pushing things up. We are doing it. We're doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that for us.
Me too. Me too.
Well, that is all I have. Is there any other things that you would like to add before we wrap up?
Well, just again, a shameless self-promotional plug for my book, My Summer with Ospreys, A Therapist's Journey Towards Hope, Community, and Healing Our Planet. So hopefully people will read that and learn about ospreys, but also learn about all those other things too.
Yeah,
and thank you for having me, Taylor. I really appreciate it. It was a wonderful experience for my first podcast.
Yeah, it was super amazing having you on. And for anyone interested in buying the book or looking more at your resources, I will provide those in the link of the description. So feel free to check that out. And thank you again for coming onto the podcast and sharing with us.
Thank you. Keep up the good work. We need you.
And that wraps up another episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist. To check out Pamela's book, look for the link in the description of the podcast, and you can also follow The Hopeful Environmentalist Instagram to stay up to date with episode releases, get weekly hopeful climate news, and more exciting partnerships and resources, which is all linked in the description of this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review so we can encourage others to take a listen to the podcast as well. And as always, thank you for joining another episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist, and remember to stay hopeful and create positive change.